flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
From Michael, loved this segment. Wasn't sure I would, but man, Buck did a great job. It's always great to hear from Buck. From MJ, thank you for an amazing conversation with Steve Buckhance. He explained what potentially happened better than anyone I've heard as of yet. Appreciate the thoughtful and thorough insights. Many prayers to the families. From Burgundy Gear, that's about the name. From Justin, thank you. That was awesome. Had no idea Buck was so into it and expertise. Buck is a pilot and he understands aviation, and he has really been very much kind of an historian of, you know, plane crashes over the years. He's really, really knowledgeable. Anyway, we shift topics to our guy Chris Nocke, who was on the call last night with Johnny Holiday. Terps beat Wisconsin. That's what I was watching. It had just finished up when, you know, my son said, "What's going on at Reagan? Was there a crash there?" And then all attention turned to that. I'm just curious. You get done calling the game, you're probably in there interviewing Willard in the locker room. When did you hear about it?
You know, my daughter had called me on the way home. I was on 295, and I had not heard of it yet. And she had been texting me, but my phone was in my pocket, and I didn't see her text. At any rate, Kevin, much like you, I went to Buck when I heard the news.
Right. A lot of us did.
Part of a group text with Buck last night, and I heard his breakdown a few minutes ago, and I kind of chuckle. He's a great friend of mine. I know he is yours too, but like, we'll play golf, and he's got this app on his phone where he'll look up and say, "Oh, that's flight, you know, 432 that's going from here to Singapore." You know, I mean, he knows exactly what plane is flying above you at any point in time. So I hate to say that this is wheelhouse stuff because it's not fun or laughable or anything like that, but it's I went to Buck just like you did.
I should have asked him that, because anybody that's ever been friends with Buck over the years knows what his true passion is. It's not the Wizards. Oh, yeah. It's flight and flying, and I think all of us were texting him last night. And he's so great, too, with his sort of in-game analysis. You know, that's a terrible way to put it. I didn't mean to put it that way. But as this event is unfolding, he's giving you, you know, exactly where that plane was coming in. And I'll tell you what, to be honest with you, as I'm watching and flipping around, I'm like, Buck would be a much better guest than 95% of the people that are on air right now.
Yeah, but note, you gotta have to note that the confusion for the news, the media and the sources and all the squawking that was going on, it had to be pretty trying for them to put together something cogent. So yeah, I agree. And just listening to his breakdown with you a few minutes ago, I mean that was money. That's really, really well said, all of it.
All right, let's talk about the game because it was. Yeah. First of all, you know, it's been kind of a weird year in that early on we thought, wow, this is a different team and this is a really good basketball team with maybe the freshman of the year, not in the Big Ten, but nationally. And then, you know, it hit the skids out west with Washington and Oregon. There was a tough loss to Northwestern. There were a couple of sloppy wins, to be fair, against Minnesota and Nebraska. But, man, the last three games, although we'll talk about last night, you and I were also texting during the game last night, but
yeah,
least, you know, we've talked about this. We've all talked about it. You know, the support of the program and whether or not you're going to have one of those electric atmospheres or whether or not it's going to be the opposite of that. Two wins on the road at Illinois and Indiana made that house, along with the students being back, back to where it should be, we think, every night. But just tell me about the atmosphere before we get to the game.
Yeah, I mean, I was really happy to hear on my way over that there were just a couple hundred seats that remained, a couple hundred tickets, I should say. And that makes all the difference in the world. They eventually listed it at 17,950, which is a sellout. There were a handful of open seats, but there's something about that gold rush night with the students all in the gold T-shirts. I think, you know, you also get that, you get the students who are finally out from under the iron boot of their parents at home, you know, and they were letting it go last night. You know, it was a raucous, rowdy crowd, and it was exactly what this team needed. Because I thought yesterday I was asked on a show in Baltimore, hey, you know, this team's rolling right now. Do you really want a break? And selfishly, I said, well, I want a break. We've had 9 games in 27 days. I thought last night the team looked like it needed a break. You know, it was a long January, right? They're going in on the right note here. But, you know, some of these guys have played a lot of minutes. It might be a good time for them to, you know, you win that game playing a kind of a, maybe a B game, B minus
yeah.
game.
Yeah, the C plus, B minus game. It was not what we saw at Illinois or Indiana. I texted you at halftime because I listened to you, especially at halftime and then after the game typically interview, and you said they need to relax. They're so tight. It's exactly what they looked like last night. You know, playing in front of a raucous home crowd, having played great, but there was nothing free-flowing about their offensive game, and that's what it really was against Indiana and Illinois.
Yeah, it looked like that crowd ended up being kind of a double-edged sword early on, right? Where, you know, they're definitely into it. It's exciting to have. I thought they were really amped up and played defensively. I thought they had a very good night last night. It was just that, you know, offensively they were stepped too fast in some situations. Made some questionable choices and just a little too geeked, maybe because of that crowd, but. Ended up being the right thing, or, you know, the right medicine for this team, and you beat a good team. I walked out with one of the officials last night, and he said, you know what, I could easily see those two teams playing in the semifinal or the final of the Big Ten this year, and which was a very nice compliment, I think, to both squads. But here's a guy who's reffed virtually every team in the league this year, every team in the conference, and he said that, and I hadn't really thought about it, but I'll take it. I would take that right now.
Chris Knocke joining us. So they were down five in the second half, and Deshaun Harris-Smith got a look from the left wing, and he's passed on that look a lot, and he shot it, and I thought that was absolutely, in the second half, a bit of the turning point. To be honest with you, at halftime, the fact that they had a lead I thought was a miracle with the way they had played, and I felt like if they just play a little bit better, they're going to win this game, but they were down five again. How big was that shot? It was the only one he made last night. I was so happy for him, by the way, but what did you think of that as kind of the turnaround moment in the second half?
I think it clearly was, and the floodgates kind of opened after that, but credit to him, because I think there are probably a lot of people in that arena that were thinking no, and then he buries the shot, swishes the shot, and then next two possessions, bang, bang, another couple of threes, and that game turned on a dime from Deshaun's shot. I thought a big stretch of the game, you referenced it sort of peripherally, Kevin, was their two best players, John Tanjay and then Blackwell, both the guys in the backcourt, picked up their second fouls, and they both went to that Wisconsin bench. That's why you had that lead at halftime, even though you didn't really play well. You kind of you outscored Wisconsin in the last 2 minutes, and that's why you got the lead. It's not because you were playing great, certainly. But it was a up and down game, and you got to ride those things out.
So, what are we looking at here? They've won. At this point, they've won four games in a row. They've won six of their last seven. The only loss, an overtime loss to Northwestern. Like I mentioned before, it hasn't been pretty until the Illinois and Indiana games offensively. How good is this team? Like, what is their upside?
Well, first of all, you have to look at the losses a little bit differently now as circumstances have unfolded. Minnesota, we struggled. We ended up winning the game. I don't know, was it 6 or 7 points?
And they played better since.
And in Minnesota, then the next game beats an undefeated Michigan team, at home. So and then they went on
they
the road
Oregon
again.
Too.
They beat Oregon. So that looks a little different at this point in time. Northwestern beat Illinois early in the season, and that's Illinois fully healthy and fully loaded. The losses. It's just everything is, as the coaches like to say, it's hard to win. It's hard to win in this league, particularly when you get on the road. I think this team can compete with anybody. One of the things that's amazing to me is the delta between the backcourt this year and the backcourt last year.
Of course.
Couldn't score, couldn't buy.
Well, Jameer could. Right? He was the only one.
Yeah, but I wonder, Jameer, and he had no help. He had nobody contributing in the backcourt with him. But and he had a great year. I'm not taking anything away from Jameer. He was a great Terp, and he had a phenomenal year. But they went out and they filled they completed the recipe in the portal this year. They went out and did everything they wanted to do. Got the guys they wanted to get, and they meshed together so well. These three guys, Gillespie and Miguel. Rodney Rice, even when he's not playing well, the plus-minus for Rodney Rice is off the charts. So, he's doing a lot of little things for this team. So, anytime, it's still a guards game, in spite of, you do have some quality big men around the country, but college basketball is the ultimate guards game. And with these three guys, you feel like you can compete in any game that you're playing. It'll be an interesting February for these guys because the schedule does turn. You finally get a stretch of home games, you have to take advantage. And I suspect games like last night will really engage the crowd, the 17,950. Everybody's coming back to that next game, I promise you, which is Super Bowl Sunday against Rutgers.
Yeah, and they've got a home game against SC. They've got a home game against Michigan State. 6:30 drives me nuts when they play 6:30 on a weeknight.
Yeah.
But that game could be a massive game late next month. So, of course, you call every game, and people like me watch every game. Last year, they didn't have anybody that could throw it into the ocean from a boat. It was so frustrating. He goes out, and he gets shooters. Rice, Gillespie, Selton, Miguel. They got guys that can just flat-out shoot it. But to me, and I'm curious because I don't think we've talked about this, And by the way, he was briefly on the bench last night, and Hummel had said that maybe he was hurt. But I think the guy that stirs all of this is Gillespie. I think he's the key to the whole run if they've got one in him over the next 2 months. What do you think?
Yeah, he's had a remarkable season, and he's a different kind of point guard than Jameer. But, man, and Kevin, just I hate to parse the point here, but, you know, it's one thing to go out and get shooters. He went out and got players.
Yeah.
These guys are multifaceted guys, and they don't cheat you defensively. Watching Celt Miguel battle John Tanjay, who I think is an NBA-level player, last night, and Tanjay got 20-something and 22, 23 points. He's good, but, I mean, just watching the effort and the industry, you know, when watching these guys on both ends, it's one thing to go out and find the best shooters in the portal, but he went out and got guys who can ball, you know, can really play, and that's another thing entirely. And, yeah, your point about Gillespie, I absolutely agree, and I have not had a chance to look over the broadcast. I do get a chance to talk to Hummel usually during or usually before or after the games. Last night was such a circus in that building, and I didn't get a chance to visit with him. But, he's been – I'd be interested to see if you took – you know, if you checked out an all-conference team at this point in time. I think guys like him and Julian Reese would have to be guys who get real consideration in terms of the years that they've had, for sure.
Reese is such a great story. I mean – I don't know anything about him personally. Obviously, he's sort of a high-profile player in part because of his sister, but he's been here for 4 years. The improvement, not just free throw shooting, which obviously is an incredible jump because he was a train wreck at the free throw line his sophomore and junior seasons, and now he's shooting in the high 70s, I believe, or mid-70s, somewhere around there. But, I mean, in recent games, it's like, you know, a ridiculous percentage. Just his overall game, there's no doubt, and I mean, maybe this isn't true, but when you see that kind of improvement, it is a lot about the work he put in before this season. And I there's a certain level of rooting and respect for him that I've had more so this year than ever before. I think he's incredibly remade as a player in so many ways. I give the coaches credit too, but it's got to be a lot him, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. You got to give the coaches credit because I think they're in the gym with him shooting at 7 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, so at one point he'd made 29 of 30 free throws recently, and the beauty of that too is, you know, it used to be that down the stretch of games you had to take him off the court in the last 3 or 4 minutes. You know, you had to go offense and defense, and he could only play on the defensive end. Now that's not really a concern, and I think also as he's played, he's mastered some of the subtleties of what, you know, his role is. One of the lost plays, it's not a play, but a subtle thing that happened at the end of that Indiana game, they had designed that last play, was always designed to get a three-pointer off. It didn't work out the way they designed it. They were trying to run a hammer, kind of a hammer play, whether you get the three in the corner to Miguel. Well, the ball's fumbled. It's good. You know, Gillespie kind of kicks it around, shovels it to Julian. And Julian not only makes the handoff to Rodney Rice, but he sets the screen.
Yep.
And so you're able to successfully execute the play, you know, kind of in an impromptu way. And that's a subtle little thing that is every bit as important as the Rice shot, really. And that's why he got the shot. That's why I got the clean look. And so little things like that you get from older guys. I mean, I agree with you. I've known him. I can't say I'm close to him, but I have mad respect for what he's done for himself as a player and as a guy, and the level of maturity that has grown. He used to have some temper issues as a freshman, you know, and they used to get the better of him a little bit. And he's come just miles and miles from that point.
Yeah, and everything offensively has slowed down for him. I mean, he takes his time. That jump hook that he gets to, then he's patient getting to it. it's now almost unstoppable. And it's just, yeah, it's fun to watch the, you know, a 4-year player. You don't get a chance to see that and see how they can kind of blossom later in their career.
Yeah, you might not see that much anymore at all moving forward. You know, it's one of those things.
They are 7-4 currently in the Big Ten. That's fourth place right now, sole possession of fourth. They play two teams in front of them. They play at Michigan later in the year. Before that, Michigan State. From the beginning of the season, I think you and I both thought this is a top four, top five Big Ten team. You think they'll finish there? And then if they do, what does that equate to in terms of their seed in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of traffic in that area, you know, in that, I get a lot of people say, gosh, why aren't we ranked? How is it Maryland is not ranked? Well, the fact of the matter is there are just a lot of teams in that, you know, in that, what is it, maybe 12 to 30 range, you know, where they're all interchangeable at this point in time. So the double bye would be huge, to get to the double bye in the Big Ten tournament, because you don't start till Friday. You play a team that's played the night before. Big advantage. And if you got to that situation where you're a top four team, I think you're probably looking at, you know, worst case scenario, a 6 or 7, I guess.
Yeah,
worst case scenario. And that depends on, too, you mentioned, you know, like beating Michigan State's a game changer in terms of your seed. You know, winning at Michigan, those are things that, you know, that pop for people that are making these decisions. So, there's a lot of meat left on that bone. They play 7 of 20 conference games, and I will see what happens. But I do love the flip in the schedule. It seems like we've been away a lot thus far, and get back home in February would be cool to get some home cooking.
Naki, not a big fan of the Big Ten road schedule.
Now that they put in Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, I know.
I'm telling you, that is forever, man, going out there to play.
Yeah. Is Michigan State legit, or is it just that they haven't really played a difficult Big Ten schedule? They're 9-0 in the Big Ten, for those that aren't paying attention, 18-2 overall. They're ranked 6th or 7th right now in the country. Is this one of those Izzo teams or not? I haven't watched enough. We've had football.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have that one, you know, real guy, the one alpha-type guy who's a 22, 23-point game guy, but they've got a really nice chemistry. They have definitely benefited from the way the Big Ten schedule has, broke for them early on. But with that, with those wins, you accumulate so much, you know, confidence and so much swagger, and it's Izzo coaching the team, so you know they got a certain amount of attitude to them. They play hard as hell. They play fast as hell. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how good they are when they get out and they're playing at Illinois and at Maryland and, you know, with the way the second half breaks for them. They're still going to be around at the end. You have to respect that and expect that. It's a little different Michigan State team. I mean, I watched their point guard from last year, A.J. Hogarth, is, you know, playing for Vanderbilt and doing a nice job at Vanderbilt as well. So they have a lot of new faces on that team.
Last one has nothing to do with the Big Ten or Maryland. Have you watched enough of Cooper Flagg at Duke this year? And if so, what do you think? Is he the clear-cut number one next year?
So I've seen a bunch of them. I mean, they're on TV, you know, more than Friends is, right? So they're on TV a lot. I will say last night after I got home, I did get a chance to watch Rutgers and Northwestern. And Ace Bailey from Northwestern had the easiest 37-point night I think I've ever seen. And he's a top-3 pick. I'm a bad judge, I think, of what translates to the NBA. I've had a number of NBA guys tell me that they'd be happy with either of the guys from Rutgers or with Flagg. But Flagg, I guess, would have to be the prohibitive choice right now. But I don't think there's quite the distance between 1 and 2 and 1 and 2 and 3 that a lot of people thought might be the case just a couple of months ago.
Thank you for doing this. As always, I'll talk to you soon. That's a big win last night.
That was fun.
It makes February. Now the football season's over for us. The focus, hopefully, is on a big run for Maryland in the NCAA tournament. Appreciate it.
You bet, man. Talk soon.
Chris Nockey, everybody. Yeah, this team is a tournament team. There's no doubt about that now. I guess it could fall apart in the last nine games of the Big Ten, but they just have the ability to score. And like Nockey said, and it's a really good point, the guys they added like Gillespie and Selton Miguel and Rodney Rice are basketball players, you know, great shooters, but great feel for the game, great feel for spacing. Gillespie's a really good playmaker. They'll get after it on the defensive end as well. They played great defense in the first half last night. And I just went 18 minutes with Nockey, didn't mention the freshman sensation Derek Queen once. You know, he was a double-double last night, and they have so many ways to beat you. They can beat you with threes like they did last night, 12 of 24, same thing at Indiana, or they can beat you inside like they did at Illinois with Reese and Queen, or they can beat you with a combination of both. It's a good basketball team. Here's the thing, Denton, I don't know, because we've been so wrapped up into football. I've watched the least amount of college basketball at this point than I've ever watched. I don't know how good Auburn is. I don't know how good Duke is, Bama, Iowa State, Houston. You know, just these SEC teams in general. I don't know if Maryland is second tier, third tier. You know, if they end up being a four or a five seed, do they have a legitimate shot to make a Final Four run or a deep run, a second weekend run? I don't know that yet. We'll figure it out over the next month. At least we got something to root for. By the way, you know who else is having a hell of a season right now in college basketball? How about giving it up for George Mason? Tony Skin and George Mason, they are in first place in the A-10. They won again last night. Last night they beat Loyola of Chicago for, I think it's their sixth straight win. And they're in first place in the A-10. We had Tony Skin. Remember we had him on before during the Olympics or after the Olympics? I forget when it was, but he was a great guest. We'll get him on again, I promise. Denton's News next.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, so we're going to start with college basketball. You just had a great conversation with Nockey there. Yesterday was a huge day, Kevin, for local teams, you know, hyper-local, not so hyper-local. Everyone except for Richmond won yesterday. Maryland won. ODU won. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think I knew this because right before the show, I think I said to you, it seems like, because we just talked about Tony Skin and Mason's team, I was listening to, I was listening to another station coming in because of the news of the plane crash. And my good friend Dave Preston ripping through the local winners. I'm like, that's a lot of winners in one night. So why don't you give them to us?
So as you mentioned, Mason, we talked about Maryland. Maryland won. ODU beat App State. Again, that's like kind of a, if you're really stretching local, but still right. They're in the state of Virginia. UVA over Miami. Virginia Tech over Florida State. GW over Richmond. Stretching the local. Navy over Lehigh. American over Lafayette. And VMI over Wofford. This is probably the first time ever that VMI has been considered local, but we're going to run with
stretching.
It.
Stretching. Navy's not a stretch. VMI and ODU are a stretch. But,
if Liberty played yesterday, I'd put them in here, too.
So nobody lost. What about women? I think the Maryland women won at Penn State last night. You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that. No.
The Wizards, however, did not win.
No, they did not. They got crushed by the Toronto Raptors. I saw something on Twitter. I wasn't watching the Toronto Raptors broadcast of this game. Obviously, if I were to watch the game, I would have watched our local broadcast. But the Toronto Raptors threw up a graphic that said the Wizards hadn't been past the first round since 79, which is obviously not true.
That's not true.
The second round. But they did not play very well against the Raptors. Kyle Kuzma had a vicious dunk that went pretty viral. That's about the only positive that came forth because they lost by 24, 106 to 82.
Well, the Raptors should know that the Wizards have been beyond the first round because the Wizards swept them in 2015, I think.
That was a great day.
Embarrassed them. But so what is this now for the Wizards? It's 15 in a row on the verge of being 16?
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah, again.
Wouldn't that be their second 16-game losing streak in the season?
It would be.
Does that tie the franchise mark for the most?
I believe it's very close. I think the franchise mark might have been 17.
They're 6-40, people. They are 6-40. And their games aren't competitive. I mean, Dallas outscored them in the first quarter the other night, 42-16. Last night, Toronto outscored Washington 31-18. So they're actually like over before they even get started. But that's really not the reason to pay attention. We all knew this was coming. The idea that the Wizards would compete for anything this year was for people that weren't paying attention to the big picture, which is they're trying to get, and they will get, in the bottom three teams, which will give them a 14% chance. The next-to-last record and the third-to-last record will also have a 14% chance to get the number one pick in the draft. And people do think, whether it's Ace Bailey or Cooper Flagg, that this could be a player that changes a franchise, whereas perhaps last year it wasn't necessarily thought that way. Is it Victor Wembanyama? I don't think so, but Cooper Flagg has and will come with a lot of, you know, exposure and belief that he can turn a franchise around. And Ace Bailey at Rutgers is really good as well. And the Wizards are clearly heading for that. You know, this is the least amount of Wizards that I've ever watched in my entire life. But when I do tune in, I'm not tuning in and rooting for them to win. I'm tuning in to watch Alex Sarr, to watch Bilal Coulibaly, you know, develop, to watch, George, and to watch Carrington, and to watch these young guys play to see if they have any sort of foundational piece to a team that might down the road contend in the East, contend for a title, contend at least to go beyond the second round in the postseason, which they have not done in 46 years. It'll be 46 this upcoming season. And there have been some things from Sarr that I've actually really been impressed with. Coulibaly's impressed me from the jump, not as a superstar number one, not even a number two, but definitely as perhaps a number three on a really good team. That's the reason you watch the Wizards now. I hate that, by the way, but I also understand that. You know, when it comes to your own team and turning on the games, and turning on the games is a bit of a diversion, you're typically 9 times out of 10 rooting for them to win the game. This is not what the goal is with the Wizards. The goal is to see these young players develop, and hopefully you can pluck one or two from the group that they've drafted to say, yeah, these guys are part of a championship team down the road. And down the road, we're talking 3 or 4 years at the earliest.
And a lot of new faces.
But their games aren't even, I mean, I can do this. It'll take me, you know, a minute. I'm not going to do it while I'm speaking here in the air. But their margin of victory is one of the worst ever. Or margin of loss, excuse me, is one of the worst ever. I mean, they're getting clubbed every single night. Their last, you know, loss by less than double digits is 7 losses ago. They lost to Golden State by 8. They haven't had a game decided by, I'm looking at this, by less than 8 points since they won on January 1st against Chicago. Every single loss since of the 16 losses in a row, the 15 losses in a row, excuse me, my fault. There's a 6-point loss in here to the Sixers. That was the closest.
That was the Sixers without, I don't think Embiid was playing in that.
Kobe's in town.
16 is
tonight.
LeBron, you mean?
God, that was awful. LeBron's in town. Did you know that this past Sunday was the 5-year anniversary
of Kobe's death? That. Yeah.
And what's strange is that Maryland was playing at Indiana on the day that Kobe died in the helicopter crash, mm-hmm. and Maryland was playing Indiana on Sunday.
Yeah. You are correct. 16 is the longest streak by the Wizards, so if they lose to LeBron tonight, they would have tied that again for the second time this season. Did you see that earlier this week, Jordan Poole was doing some interview? He talked a lot about being like a cat guy in the NBA, which is fine, but he also said that he should be an all-star, which, no.
Who said that?
Jordan Poole.
Sorry, I was looking at the point spread for tonight. I was just curious.
The guy that
8.5.
He said
Jordan Poole thinks he should be an all-star?
He said he thinks he should be an all-star. For those that are not paying very close attention, one, the Wizards are not very good. So you have to be like out of this world to be an all-star on a team with 6 wins. On top of that, he's 35th in scoring at 20.7. He is 41st in assists. He's 114th in field goal percentage. If you're like, what about his three-point percentage? He's 52nd. In three-point percentage. There is nothing about his game that screams all-star this
Bless
year.
His heart. Bless his heart. He's, you know, he's trying. What else you got?
All right, how about Bill Belichick saying on Pat McAfee they should rename the Lombardi Trophy to the Brady Trophy because Tom Brady won 7 of them.
He said that. Is it a way for people to bring up discussion about it being renamed the Belichick Trophy? Because yeah. He won 7 too.
He did win 7 too, but his thing was that players go out there.
Oh, wait a minute. He only won 6 because Brady won 1 with Tampa.
Right. He won 6. Yeah. So Brady's won more than he has. So therefore, it should be the Brady Trophy. His point was that players go out there and win games, not coaches.
Okay. No reason to change the name of the Lombardi Trophy.
No, the Lombardi Vince Trophy Lombardi flows was way better.
Vince Lombardi.
Right. Also, how much Tom Brady do we need? We see him every week calling games.
You can name an MVP trophy. Who's the MVP trophy named after? I don't even know.
If it is named after anybody.
And by the way, he didn't win the MVP as many times as Manning did.
And Mahomes is probably going to win it a lot more, too. Right. I think it's just the AP most valuable player. I don't know if there's a name associated with that, which is fine. I don't think there needs to be. But Peyton Manning won 5 of them. Commanders news.
One quick thing, because we talked about this during the course of the year. We talked about it preseason, and we were both kind of looking forward to Bill Belichick and Nick Saban as analysts during the football season.
Yes.
The jury is in. Nick Saban was much better and much more entertaining than Bill Belichick, and I watched a lot of both of them. Belichick was fine. The Inside the NFL show was actually the best platform for him. I don't think the Manning cast was, personally, because I think, you know, the Manning cast is you're got a game going on at the same time, and then it was a lot of Peyton and Eli. The Inside the NFL stuff was pretty good with him, but Nick Saban was outstanding all season long. As an analyst, as a his sense of humor, his dry sense of humor came through. Who knew? And I thoroughly enjoyed Saban, you know, week in and week out, more so than I did Belichick.
Yeah, I thought Saban was way better. This is going to make me sound like super duper old. I did think that ESPN got a little too lenient with them cussing on College game day towards the end. I'm all right with a swear word every now and then, but I think
it needs to be McAfee.
I know that's the problem. Like, it needs to be an impactful thing. It felt like towards the end they were just doing it because they could. I was like, I don't know. Like, a well-timed swear word, I think, is hilarious on television. There's a bit where Saban was standing with, he was sitting with Kirby and Sark, and he said they were both BS. Like, that was perfect because he knows those guys. I did think they were doing it too much towards the end, but Saban was excellent. I think he's really, really good.
Really good.
And it makes me upset that he was never this funny during pressers that I
And there's a lot of videos with, you know, that are not, that you don't see on game day with him talking about players. There's a really good video that I've seen recently with him telling Derrick Henry stories, which are outstanding. You got to be that way. Like, if you're going to end up doing this, you've got to be willing to share stories. You got to be willing to share stories that might embarrass yourself. I think he's very self-aware and willing to be self-deprecating, to potentially even embarrass to a certain degree the players, but in a loving way. And then you've got to be willing to be critical, which he was during the course of the year. Loved Saban. Loved him.
Yeah, he was really good. Commanders news. Two coaches that we potentially as an organization are going to end up losing in the next coming days, weeks. David Blau is expected to receive a lot of interest from various different coaching staffs. The Jets and the Bears in particular for some kind of promotion. I think the Bears said they might, it was one of the two might hire him for the exact same thing that he's doing right now, but there was one of them that was going to also name him passing game coordinator. So he's going to take some interviews with those two organizations, potentially others. Tevita Pritchard also interviewed with the Jaguars for their offensive coordinator position under new head coach Liam Cohen.
David Blau. David Blau played in the NFL, and when he got hired by Washington, I think there were several of us. I'm not saying I was the only person, because I know others probably talked to the same people, and it was pointed out that this guy will be a head coach really soon. He will be an OC pretty quickly. He will be a head coach eventually down the road, that he is a superstar in terms of his X's and O's acumen and everything else that goes with being a coach. And it took him 1 year, and it looks like he'll be a quarterback's coach. That means probably in 26, he'll be an OC, and by 27, he'll probably be a head coach. A lot of getting to that head coach level, you know, depends on, are you an OC in the right spot at the right time, you know, with a team that plays well, a team with a quarterback, et cetera. But I think I talked about it when they hired him, and I think others probably did too. Those people that have talked, you know, that talked to people out there understood that this was a guy that they really thought was super sharp and wasn't going to be here for long. And it looks like it'll be one season with David Blau. Good for him. And yeah, good luck to everybody else. I mean, these are the things that come from, you know, winning football games. You're not going to keep a staff together when you have the kind of season that they had, especially on offense. And that's where the looks are coming from. What else?
He was also, by the way, David Blau was the guy that went viral a couple years ago for reacting to his wife in the Olympics on Hard Knocks with the Lions.
Oh, I don't know that I don't you remember saw that,
but there's a lot of people. That was a huge, huge deal. Final thing here. Caitlin Clark opted out of participating in NBA All-Star Weekend. If you remember last year, while All-Star Weekend of the NBA has kind of been a dud recently, but last year they did a shooting contest with Sabrina Ionescu and Steph Curry. I don't know what Caitlin Clark's role was going to be, but probably that. She opted out, though, and she claims that she wants her first participation to be in front of the Indianapolis crowd. Indianapolis is hosting the WNBA All-Star Weekend coming up this upcoming year.
Okay. Makes sense.
It's kind of a loss for the NBA, that, to be honest.
It major loss for the NBA. I mean, anything she puts her name to or, you know, appears for is going to increase the audience size exponentially. Everybody has figured that out, except for the Olympic Committee last summer. They apparently didn't figure that out. By the way, I don't know if you had this, and I did see this before the show, but it's now an actual number. 14 members of the figure skating community were passengers on the jet that crashed with the helicopter last night. Six members of the or associates of the Skating Club of Boston. Listen, I don't know these names. Some of you may. It's the figure skating community is, you know, it's huge. I'm not familiar with these names, but six members or associates of the Skating Club of Boston were killed in the crash, including teenage skaters Jenna Hahn and Spencer Lane and their mothers. Also killed were two Russian skaters as well, and then two skaters who won the pairs title, excuse me, at the 1994 World Championships, and they were listed as coaches of the Boston group. So that is There's a quote here. Skating is a very close and tight-knit community. These kids and their parents, they're here at our facility in Norwood, Mass. That would be, I lived there actually for 9 months, 6, sometimes 7 days a week. It's a close, tight bond. This will have long-reaching impacts for our skating community. So sad. All right. Where will Washington land in the preseason NFC Championship odds next season? We'll get to that next. From Jay, Jay writes, stop with the name discussion. Can't we just talk ball? It's not changing. Why do you keep doing this? And then from Will, please talk about the name now. The season's over. You're ducking it. I love the perspectives on what you say and what you don't say. I did say to you earlier, like I got on Twitter right before the show and after Buck was on in particular, because people loved Buck being on. He was great. And I said, what did I say to you? I said, why is there so much? I mean, there's always a lot of name stuff, but why are they reacting to something that I said? We didn't even talk about the name today, or I don't think we talked about it yesterday. And you said we did talk about it briefly yesterday. What did I say? I didn't even remember what I said.
You talk about it so often, you don't remember what you said.
Well, we don't really talk about it. That we haven't been talking about it that much. That's the irony of Jay's email.
You said that there was a you had this hunch that they were going to change the name, which is not new. We've had that hunch for years now at this point, really since right. they came up with Commanders. But then your other hunch that really got people talking was that you feel like in some capacity there's going to be some sort of rebrand on the horizon, even if it's not a changing of the name, something to do with the jerseys, which then Bram Weinstein said yesterday after we got off the air, he kind of echoed your sentiment saying that there is expected to be some sort of changes in the way that the team is branded.
Okay. Well, I've been saying that forever now. Why yesterday? Was I more demonstrative in my...
Well,
in
no,
my
because,
thoughts,
you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. So when
I guess,
because
really,
certain...
we have been all ball, Jay, and you know that if you listen, you know. So stop trolling. You're making an ass out of yourself by saying enough of the name talk. I mean, good God, we were immersed in the season and football for 95% of the conversation about the team, and the other 5% wasn't, you know, all name. But I've said I don't think my position has changed at all. I've said the same thing for at least a year now, and that being for 2 years, it's been I do think eventually they'll change the name, but for a year now I have said I do think that they'll eventually change the name. That would be my lean, but I feel even more strongly that they'll at the very least do something with the uniforms. And I have, that's my position, that's how I feel. If I hear something or talk to somebody that changes that view, I'll let you know. That's what I have been. That is not just a hunch. It's been an educated hunch for a while now. There is no question that this has been an internal topic. They polled on this thing, for crying out loud, to find out what it is. And I'll also just once again repeat the other part of this, which is it ain't easy for them. I mean, anybody that's ever understood sort of, you know, the financial fiduciary responsibility these people have to do the right thing with respect to revenue and profitability, there's not an easy answer here. My view is doing nothing is worse than doing something, but they may not view it that way after, you know, all of they're not going to just willy-nilly do anything without having truly gone through a process, you know, lots of data, lots of conversations, lots of polling. And they've done all of that. They've been doing that for a while now. You know, I do think that had they gone on to win the Super Bowl, it would have made it more difficult. I don't think it would have been impossible. But I would say, number one, if I had to wager, I'd wager on they do something with the name. But I feel more strongly that they'll do something with the uniforms. That I would wager big money on. And then lastly, whatever they do, it ain't easy to come up with the right answer. And what I think at the very least, as a fan base, we're owed at some point is, hey, We have taken everything into consideration. We have looked at every single aspect of this question. And this is our decision because of all of the data and all of the, you know, work we've done around this topic. What would really upset me, and it won't be the case, is if they said, yeah, we never considered it. We kind of blew it off from the beginning. That, first of all, that wouldn't be true because they haven't. Secondly, I think that ultimately that would be disrespectful. Lastly, nothing's going to happen, I think, in terms of public dissemination of any thoughts on this from the owner or anybody, including the new team president that they've hired, the marketing guy, David Klaus. David Klaus or Mark Klaus? Mark Klaus, I think. I don't think anything will be disclosed publicly until the stadium deal is done with D.C. and it's passed in the city council. I think they've been waiting on getting that done first. But we do have a season to talk about, as we've been talking about mostly. By the way, are you ready to win big and live it up in Sin City? It's the slam dunk in Vegas on the Team 980. Listen for your chance to win a flyaway trip to Las Vegas with three friends and $20,000 in spending money for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. Winning is easy. Just download the free Odyssey app, log in, and listen to the Team 980 for a chance to win the experience of a lifetime. Listen each day for an hour to earn your daily entry. This is a national contest. More details available at odyssey.com/slamdunk.